This episode is brought to you by the International Parking and Mobility Institute, the world's largest association of professionals in parking, transportation, and mobility. Learn more at parking-mobility.org.
Hello and welcome to the Parking Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the $100 billion parking industry and the people that make it go. I'm your host, Isaiah Mal, and this is the Parking Podcast.
Views and opinions are my own.
Welcome back to another episode of the Parking Podcast. With us today is Kim Jackson, Director of Transportation and Parking Services at Princeton University. How are you today, Kim?
I'm great, Isaiah. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy and tickled that you joined the podcast. We go way back, so I'm so glad we could finally find time to sit down and record our thoughts. So I was looking through your LinkedIn. I noticed that you graduated from Rutgers University, and I believe that was the first parking job you had. So tell us about that. How did you go from studying what you studied to jumping into the parking program to launching this prestigious career in parking?
Well, thanks for the great question, Isaiah. Actually, I had gone to St. Lawrence University for 2 years, left school and came home and had to get a job. So I started working at Rutgers University in their library system. I ended up going back to school, long story short, after many years there in the library system, an opportunity presented itself in parking. I had no clue what I was doing, but I applied for the job. First time around, I did not get the job because they were looking for a director of operations and someone who worked on the outside doing parking lots, planning, etc. About 2 months later, they had a director of administration position open. I applied, and that's when I first got into this amazing industry. I got the job. I did all of the internal pieces, so the registration, the citation processing, the appeals piece, issuing permits. I had a fabulous mentor who made sure I knew everything there was to know about the industry. When she left, I became the first director of parking and transportation for Rutgers University, and it's been a love fest ever since.
That's awesome. And you may be our first librarian converted to parking professional. So I could see a lot of the same strengths, just that organization, the everything that goes into being an excellent librarian, I could see going into what you talked about with parking. So also IPMI, I mean, a lot of us know you served as on the board, but I believe you also were an employee of IPI or IPMI at one time. Is that correct?
That is correct. So in 1995, I went to work for what was then IMPC, which was the International Municipal Parking Congress. I started as their director of technical services coming from the industry. I was there until 2008. And when I left, I was the CEO. So I had 13/14 amazing years. We went from IMPC to IPI, now to IPMI.
Anytime you change a name, you're always a little worried when they went from IPI to IPMI, but you're right. It wasn't too long ago. It was actually IMPC that went through the change. So up to that point, was it always parking people running IPI? I believe you were probably part of the committee that brought in Sean. And what was that exchange like when you're handing over the keys to a quote unquote non-parking professional? And now I would say Sean knows parking as well as any of us, but talk about that transition.
So I followed in the footsteps of somebody who was an association manager, and I was probably their first executive who was from the operation side, the industry side, and it was great because the time period that I was there, we were going through a lot of change and a lot of growth and developing a lot of programs. So having some information about the industry, I think, was crucial. I left before Sean came, and I cannot take credit for being on his hiring committee, although they did a fabulous job. The association really needed an association executive to take it to the next level. So yeah. For the period that I was the executive director, I was able to establish certain programs, but then Sean came in as an association executive and was able to take it to the next level. So it was perfect timing, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, and you talk about some of the things I know that you were helped establish, you helped create. So talk about some of the milestones that happened with IPMI when you were at the leadership helm there.
So I think the one that I ended up being the most passionate about, I think, is one that people knew me for more than anything, or actually there were two things. One was our frontline on-site training program. I was working there actually as a director of technical services as that program started to launch. I got trained to be one of the initial trainers and was able to go across the country training some amazing people, frontline staff in customer service, conflict resolution, team building, group dynamics. And it was a great way for me to feel as though I gave back. I also was able to go to a lot of the state and regional association meetings. And to me, those are key because they're the grassroots operations. They're where the new people in this industry start to learn a little bit more about the associations and that there are other people out there who do what they do. So it was great to go to the various state and regional associations across the country and talk to people about programs we were working on, hearing what they were interested in and what they needed, and then being able to go back to IPMI and see how we might be able to help people reach what their goals and objectives were.
Well said. And I love both of those initiatives, especially the frontline training. We're going to talk about that in a second because that's played an important role in my career and our company's goals and objectives, and then also the state and regionals. I love seeing the collaboration between IPMI and the state and regionals. And now it's almost every conference you have IPMI, a committee speaking or somehow engaged in interacting with those state and regionals, which are, you're right, they're the backbone of our industry. So, but before we get there, I can't skip over your current position. So cool, you're with Princeton University. So what's it like parking cars at an Ivy League institution such as Princeton?
So I will say first, Isaiah, parking is parking wherever you go. And so even though we are an Ivy League institution, in many ways a lot smaller than Rutgers was, it is still the same challenge of getting people to understand that there is parking. It's just not right outside their front door. We have a really vigorous TDM program here called Revise Your Ride. So for the last 2, now 3 years, I've been really working with other colleagues here at the university on trying to get people to reduce single occupancy vehicles coming to and parking on campus. I will say we have 1,800 people in our program, which is really a testament to the people here at Princeton. And they're trying to help us obtain our sustainability goals as an institution and looking at how they can use alternative modes of transportation to get around differently than they had. I will say, being in Princeton and the town of Princeton, we are very lucky that we have a large faculty staff contingent within 3 to 4 miles of campus. So that does help us greatly in terms of our bike walk program, in terms of people being on our Tiger Transit bus system and busing to work. But again, it's a joy. The folks here are amazing. And it's just been a pleasure to be here. And it's hard for me to realize I've been here for 11 years.
Wow. And I know you touched on it there because it's more than just parking. You oversee the transportation as well. So I heard things like bike walk. I heard the Princeton bus system there. So are there any other transportation modes or trends that you got your fingers in? Uber, Lyft, ride sharing, scooters, anything that you're having to deal with?
Mm-hmm. So we actually have an extensive carpool and vanpool program here. And then we are lucky that we have a train station. It's called the Princeton Station, or better known to people here as the Dinky. It's a 3-mile track that brings people from the Northeast Corridor into town. So we have a large population of people in our mass transit subsidy program, and they are reimbursed up to 50% of their rail tickets. And that's on New Jersey Transit, New York subway system, the Pennsylvania SEPTA system. So we are in an area where we can offer these services. We're also working with a transportation consultant currently looking at all of our alternative transportation options, looking at micromobility, looking at if and how scooters would fit in, how do we add e-bikes. We have Zagstra bike share program here. We have enterprise car share program. So we have a lot of alternatives people can use. Our undergraduate student population is not permitted to have a car except by exception. And I will say there are very few exceptions given. And we have really worked in the last, I would say, 7 years that I've been here to let students know they don't need a car in order to get around here at Princeton.
Well, so I've heard universities where they have rules such as freshmen can't have a vehicle on campus. So did I understand it correctly that all undergraduate students can't have a vehicle?
That is correct.
Oh, wow. So that's really neat. And you guys have so many options where, especially with that train, that's pretty cool. I didn't know about that train going 3-mile loop going from downtown to the campus, plus all the other options that probably not a non-issue at this point.
For us, it's a non-issue. I'm sure for students, it's an issue. And I will say that Uber and Lyft being in the area, I do think it makes it easier for students who wish they had a car to go back and forth. But again, we do a lot to ensure that they have plenty of options.
Well said. And as you know, I have a weird hobby where I like to visit famous tombstones across the country. I think because we were driving to the airport, maybe in Denver.
We were in Denver.
In Denver. And I was like, do you mind if I stop? This is really weird. Do you mind if I stop at a cemetery? Or I think it was the memorial or something. But I'm trying to visit all the presidents, all the dead presidents, visit their final resting place. I have 6 left. One of them is in Princeton. So I'm going to come up and visit you in the near future to finish this up. But do you know, trivia question, do you know which president is buried in Princeton?
Yes, I do. That would be Grover Cleveland.
Very nice. You win.
I will say, Isaiah, when you come to campus, the cemetery is probably less than a mile from my office. So we can definitely go down and I will show you where the cemetery is and you can check that one off your list.
I love it. Yeah, there's some other famous, I think Jonathan Edwards, some other famous people in that cemetery that I want to get. So, oh, that's funny. That's impressive. You win a... I don't have any yet, but you win a parking podcast shirt when I create them. So. All right. So we touched on this. We talked about everything you've done in this industry for IPMI, for Princeton, but your focus on training and education. So we're going to touch on some of the things that you've done, but why is this so important to you to make sure our frontline, our supervisors or managers are getting that training in the parking industry?
I really believe that the folks on the front line may not always understand why they do what they do. They may see their role as a task versus a job. They don't necessarily see themselves as ambassadors, see themselves as the people who help ensure there's economic development in a municipality, that in a hospital setting, people can get in to visit loved ones. Here at the university, faculty can come to teach and staff can come to keep operations running. And it is a lot bigger than the job title that they have. So, you know, you may be a parking, I hate this term, but a parking clerk, you're a parking enforcement officer, you're a customer service rep, but you are so much more. And I think for a lot of our frontline employees, they don't understand that, and or they may have understood it when they come in, but day after day after day, you're in a thankless job, you start to lose focus. And I think the training for the frontline people reminds them of why they do what they do and also helps them understand that people really appreciate what they do. So when I come in as a trainer, or Cindy Campbell comes in, or Wanda Brown, who does training, comes in, to them, we're outsiders and we're the experts. But when we say we've done what you do and we've walked in your shoes and we understand it and we give real life examples, they can embrace that. And if nothing else for that day, it gives them a shot of somebody understands what I do, somebody understands why I do what I do, and somebody appreciates what I do. Even though their supervisor, manager, director, et cetera, could tell them the same things we do. So that's one of the reasons why I think the frontline training is so important. I also think, though, CAP and attendance at conferences and the books that IPMI has published are really critical because, again, none of us go to college or have gone to college to say, I want to learn to be a parking and transportation professional or a specialist or a mobility specialist. We've more or less fallen into our job. We've learned on the job. If people were as lucky as I am to have a great mentor, somebody gave you the tools you need, but over time things have changed. And I think that's where the education piece is so critical and why it was important for us to get the CAP credential, why it's important for us to continue our training and do our conferences and our APOs and do what we can to get this industry recognized for all of the great, amazing things that happen.
Well, I have a couple comments. So I think number one, spot on, especially with this generation, Generation Y, the millennials, Generation Z, when you talk about finding purpose in what they do, they're not interested in trading time for money or performing tasks that provide no value. So when they can understand how their role, like you said, it's way more important than a job title, how their role plays into the whole ecosystem and what they're doing for their communities through helping with the parking situation, your retention's better, your job satisfaction's better, they're happier. And that's crucial to running a great organization and helping cities and universities and hospitals with their parking and transportation challenges. The other one is I have sat through trainings for my staff where someone wants to come in and talk about customer service that's worked in the retail or restaurant, and it does not go near as well. And then there's some really good ones out there, and there's been a lot of success there, but you could just see them sit out when someone says, I've been there. I used to write parking tickets. Like Cindy is a great example. Cindy Campbell talks about issuing parking tickets, and they know what they're going through. Cindy knows she's been yelled at. She's been cussed at. Like she has the street cred, the history there to relate to parking enforcement officers. It goes a long way. So I'm so glad that people that actually have done this put together the training and the books too. I know those were so helpful early on in my career. Parking 101. Were you a part of those when you were the CEO at IPI? Because I believe those were around the same time there.
Yes. So I was around for the 101 series. I have a chapter on customer service in the original book. And they were great tools. But I also think the new parking book that IPMI published, now I guess it was 2 years ago, mm-hmm. is, again, the next level of book knowledge that we can share with people. It is a really huge task to get a book done. It's a labor of love. But I think at the end of the day, having that resource at your fingertips is something that's very helpful for the new generation that's coming up. I consider myself one of the old heads, and I can pass along certain information, but I think that the books that we have been able to publish really give credibility to the information we may share with people. And is a great resource that they can reference back on the job. Because again, as both of us say, you know, we didn't get a degree in this, but it's also really helpful when you can go back to a resource and say, you know, this information was in the parking book published XYZ by IMPI. And I just think that helps people in their career.
Yeah, that was my next question was, you've done so much for frontline training. You're a big part of the CAP program. I know you taught some classes when I was going through CAP. But what about those kind of new to the industry? They're not frontline. They don't have the experience yet history to get enrolled into the CAP program. But I think that book's a great place to start. But I didn't know if you had any other nuggets of gold for that new manager that doesn't qualify for CAP but needs something to learn more about the industry.
I am a strong proponent of mentoring people and creating some mentorship opportunities. I know for CAP, there are mentors. We've talked about this with the IPMI board and with the membership director. I think giving back to people and just taking a minute at a conference, at a state and regional, wherever you may be, when you meet someone new, to share information, to kind of welcome them into the fold and say, you know, if you ever need anything, feel free to contact me. I've been doing this for a minute. I'll connect you to the people that may be able to help you if I can't. I think that's what's key for those new people.
I always say if I've had any success in this industry, it's because of mentors. It's been, I've never been afraid to ask questions or reach out for help. I'm to the point where I've worn people out, but people like Gary Means and Hal King and others, Romy, just people I've reached out to over the years about anything, just parking specific questions or career guidance or relationship, it just anything. People in this industry have always been there to help and support. And I know there's a lot of people in this industry and that you could reach out to that can be that mentor. And I think you've been mentor to some people. I know that's a great answer there.
Thank you. And I just, again, I hope if someone is new and they listen to this, they realize that it's okay to ask questions and it's okay to say, I'm not sure, I don't know, because we were there. I'm almost 30 years in, but I do remember my very first year. And so, you know, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to, you know, seek out that information. Because I know sometimes when you're new, you may want to, you know, kind of not be a shrinking violet, but not really put yourself out there. But this is an industry, and you know from being in it, Isaiah, that people are really welcoming and embrace new people and just really want people to succeed. And I don't know that I can say that for many other industries.
No, I know, actually know that for a fact. I think I told the story in the podcast before, but we had, when we were developing the job description survey for the CAP program, we had a, I forgot what you call it, some sort of statistician, I'm not good at that word, or isometrician, I can't remember the exact title, but they surveyed our parking industry, and they work with different industries, you know, dental, lawyers, accountants. And they said normally for when you email out the population, the body, I guess, of the parking industry or different industries, they would get whatever, 8%, 9% response rate on the surveys. And when they did the parking one, she said, I've never seen anything like this in my 30-year career, where it was like 70, 80% response rate, which to this day always brings that up, just about, we were trying to figure out what that was, like why the parking industry were so many people willing to go out of the way to help with the cause. And I don't know if it's a blue collar industry. I don't know. I don't even want to guess, but just this community that we have, you're right. It's made up of a lot of great people that are willing to jump in and help and be that mentor or help with the questions. But yeah, there's evidence to back that up.
I do think, and yes, and I do think it's because, again, you know, I think of, you know, people who were coming up kind of when I was coming up, and that's how we got information. And I think everyone that, you know, again, in my almost 30-year career that I've dealt with, that I've spoken with, that everybody is always willing to share information, give information. And I think that's what sets us apart. I also think most of us are very passionate about what we do. And I also think that that makes a difference, because we realize, I think, what it's like to be on the customer side, because we're also customers. So, you know, when I go into the town of Princeton, I look at their meters. I look at, you know, how they do what they do. You know, I get information from them. And I think that that also speaks to why, and I do remember that meeting about the job analysis, why we were all so eager to answer those questions.
Great way to put it. And I know we talked about IPMI a lot, but you were also recently the board chair. Was that, I know there was Liliana, Romy, I think you were somewhere in between there. So when were you the IPMI chair, and what was that experience like compared to being the CEO?
So I chaired after Lily. So I was chair from 2015 to 2017. And again, I'm very lucky. I've been a member of the association. I was able to serve as chairman of the board. I've been able to be the CEO. So I've been able to look at this from many different angles. Being chairman of the board was a phenomenal opportunity for me, mainly because at the time, IPMI was getting ready to branch into mobility, but we were also looking at data and setting data standards and creating the GPALS group. So working with our international colleagues and really putting the eye back into international parking. And those opportunities are things that I would have never dreamt of in my life, and said that I would have gone to Germany for a GPALS meeting, or I would have had the opportunity to go to Brazil to an ABRAPARK conference. And so it has been an amazing opportunity for me, not only to grow as a professional, but to also share information and bring back information for the association.
I've got to run for that board if you're getting trips to Germany and Brazil. So, that's great. So you actually did go to those places. What was that like to travel to another country and talk about parking in a different country?
It was really interesting, Isaiah, because again, everybody does things a little differently than we do. So, you know, one, when you go to Europe, it's a huge biking and busing and kind of train community. So there's lots of cars, but cars were kind of the afterthought. So it's interesting to see their signage and how their bike parking is arranged, and how in buildings it's important that there's indoor bike storage, what their signage is like. And then to go to Brazil, which is more of commercially operated parking entities, that's a different side for me because I've always been public sector. So, you know, how they do their car parks, how they charge, all of those things just helped me be a better professional, gave me ideas that I could use here at Princeton or share with other people. And I just think it's great that we are this big community.
Yeah, I grew up overseas. I actually spent half my life in different countries. And I think that has definitely been a competitive advantage for me just in the business world, being able to, like you said, you're just exposed to so many things. You see things differently. You're able to fit in more places than not. But well said. So what else do you like? I guess you're a foreign traveler here now. So what else do you like to do when you're not parking cars?
So I guess three of my passions all have to do with physical activity in one way or another. Prior to a few years ago with a hip replacement, I was a runner, not the fastest runner there was, but I competed in half marathons. I actually walked a marathon for a cancer event in New York City. And so now I like to, I would say, power walk, 5Ks, 8Ks, anything that's kind of outside where I feel like I'm really kind of pushing my body to the limit. I also love boxing, which people go, really? And it's like, yes, boxing is something that I'm very passionate about. And I've now, in my older age, taken yoga and Pilates. So now understand and enjoy the ability to stretch and become more flexible.
Wow, I had no clue that Kim Jackson's a lightweight boxing champion here. So that's so great. Do you go to like a club or do you have like a setup at home that you like to spar with?
There's a trainer that I used to work with who's a boxer who works out of a gym, and two nights a week he teaches classes. And I've been taking classes with him for the last 5 years.
That is so cool. And then I knew that you like to dabble in running because I believe I've seen a picture of you in a Tough Mudder. Is that true? You did a Tough Mudder at one time?
That is true. I did a Tough Mudder with parking colleagues in Houston, Texas.
Oh, wow. And having done my first marathon last year, I don't care if you're walking, crawling, jogging, to finish that is very respectable. I've garnered a lot of respect for those people that can do that, because that took everything out of me to finish that race. But that's really, really cool. Now, I got a question for you. And if you don't know off the top of your head, that's fine. But do you know where we were at IPMI in 2010?
2010. This is 19. Were we in Vegas in 10?
We were in Vegas. And I don't even need to know that. Gary Means told me that you can ask him any year where we were for IPMI and she'll get it right 9 out of 10 times. So off the top of your head, that's amazing that you got that. I hear you're like the IPMI resident expert, all things trivia. So I thought I would quiz you on that one.
Also though, Gary Means, it's funny that you say Gary, because I do believe he, Dave Honorato, and a whole group of other people were part of the 2010 CAP graduating class. And they make it a point to remind me that they were of the great class of 2010.
Yeah, they had a lot of fun at IPMI last year where everyone was arguing the greatest CAP class.
Correct.
Did you ever do your CAP? Are you CAP?
Yes, I got my CAP in 2000.
Well, here's the next question, trivia question. Do you know when the first IPMI CAP class graduated?
I think the first classes were held in 91 in Vegas. So I'm going to guess graduation was in Phoenix, and I'm going to guess it was 94.
I actually don't know that one. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I'm sure you're right. That's impressive.
I don't know if I'm right. It could be 93, but I think it was 94, and I do believe it was in Phoenix.
Nice. And I know you've been a central part of the CAP community over the years, and teaching and mentoring. And so thanks for all you do to CAP. Thank you for all you do in the parking industry. I know you have just this contagious smile, infectious smile. Every time I see you and get that hug at IPMI, just makes a person feel really great. So thanks for all you do, Kim. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Isaiah. This is awesome. And it's been truly a pleasure.
To our listeners, thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Parking Podcast.
Please leave us a review and tell a friend about our show. It would mean a lot. This has been a production of Synchronicity Media, produced by me, Isaiah Mao. Our music and score is by Zona. Our show art and design is by the talented Allison Gilley. You can follow us on social media at The Parking Podcast, or you can find our website with bonus content at parkingcast.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks. This episode is brought to you by the International Parking and Mobility Institute, publishers of the industry's only soup-to-nuts textbook about all things parking. It's called A Guide to Parking, and several of our guests from previous episodes have contributed to this wonderful little textbook. Learn more and order your own copy at parking-mobility.org/textbook.
You know what song I'm going to play in my podcast?
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
I am
for me.
See you, Kim.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, go like this. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.